broadcasting live from the PHX.FM studio in Phoenix, Arizona. It's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Amanda June, owner of Smokefire Media, and Ashley Bright, founder of Ashley Bright Presents. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Adrian. Happy to be here today.
You're both extraordinary communicators. You are in the business of communications, messaging, media, and marketing, and this is such an essential skill set for anybody who, as a small business owner, solopreneur, nonprofit, C-suite executive, everybody needs to hear from you and your expertise. Amanda, why don't you start our conversation off by telling us about Smokefire Media, who you work with, how you work, who you serve, things like that.
Yeah, for sure. And thank you again for having me. This is great to be here. I'm always loving to share the story and kind of share how we help business owners and to scale their growth and be successful. So Smokefire Media is 5 years old this December, celebrating 5th birthday, which is very exciting. We are a culturally competent marketing, PR, and advertising agency and multimedia company. We focus on two specific areas in our niche markets, which are culturally competent marketing for nonprofits, organizations, tribal communities, communities in general, and small business marketing, where we package our services into kind of easy to understand service areas for business owners, solopreneurs, focused on their stage of growth rather than their overall marketing budget. So that's really what makes us a bit different than other marketing agencies. We have a totally different structure, and we are definitely mission-based marketing agency. And that just means that everything we do goes back to our purpose, which is serving the communities and really trying to scale our impact and bring marketing to the masses that really need them.
Now, you mentioned that you're a culturally competent marketing agency, and I like that term because it also implies there's a lot of cultural incompetence going on out there. Without disparaging those folks or throwing anyone under the bus, there is something unique to the way you work with the communities you serve. Can you speak directly to that cultural competence aspect of what you do?
Yeah, definitely. And it's definitely meant to be intentional. You know, there's no fun to be had sitting on the fence. So it's definitely intended to point it out that it's there is cultural incompetence in the world, and that's what we're here to make impact on. So culturally competent marketing for us is an actual method that we've kind of gotten down here that was not something that I had seen in the industry at all. And that's what I felt was missing, was that there is a gap between our communities and how we communicate, specifically kind of the public at large and Native American and Latino communities. And that was where the whole purpose of the company started for me. So coming from a nonprofit background, working in the communities, I saw that there's always so much need, but doing everything from fundraising, volunteer management, program management, things like that, I finally found my call in the nonprofit field when I started doing marketing and PR for nonprofits. And that's where I saw this is what needs to happen. The media and communications is where we need the most resources, even outside of, you know, donations or program support. Telling the story of our communities and their issues is truly where I felt there was a huge gap that needed to be filled. And that's where the need for Smokefire Media started.
Now, you also have a flagship publication that has been part of the backbone of this business. Can you speak a little bit about how that's evolving over the 5 years that you've been operating?
Yeah, definitely. And that was, so the publication is the Visionary Business Magazine, which was our first part of the company that we rolled out in 2015. Before all the marketing, before any of the other areas that we work in, the Visionary Magazine was the first, that was the baby that got everything started out. And it's based, the model of storytelling is based off of Entrepreneur Magazine, where we focus on the entrepreneur's story, their journey, and their model, and how they made it work for them to showcase that across Indian country and Latino communities so that others can learn, others can connect with them to do it for themselves and make the biggest impact in their communities. But that's where we started, and doing advertising and things like that for our clients. And then we started building the marketing company after that. But the intention was to be able to have that media presence for our communities that I felt wasn't there, again, to tell the stories, to showcase what's working for those communities in terms of business development, rather than an purely economic landscape or data story. I felt those stories of the business owners needed to be told.
Absolutely. And we'll circle back and get into some of those details and unpack some of the implications of that. Ashley Bright, you are the message fixer. Your company works with individuals and with organizations to help communicate more effectively. Tell us a little bit about your work, the specific kinds of people you serve, and why this is so important.
Certainly. Yeah. Well, thank you for the invitation. I'm glad to be here. I help, in a nutshell, I help business leaders and entrepreneurs fix their messaging so they can improve their bottom line. One of the challenges I see is that, you know, we all use words every day, friends, family, strangers. But when it comes to using those words strategically to help trigger interest from investors, to help bridge that gap between your product or service and your customers, or even internally with employee retention or bringing in new talent, we don't often realize just how meaningful and how significant the words we use are and the stories that we tell. So coming from a background in advertising and marketing, where I spent years, literally over a decade, pitching ideas to Fortune 500 companies, I started to see what worked and what didn't and what resonated. And what I also noticed was that I was working with tremendously talented people who had great ideas that could solve important problems, but they just couldn't articulate it in a way to trigger interest from people. And so, unfortunately, those ideas would never go anywhere. So I sort of, about 7 years ago, I kind of jumped in and I decided that, you know what, this is really my calling. This is something I really want to do. And so I started figuring out how to take what I'd learned intuitively and what I did intuitively over my career and quantify that into something that would be actually helping business leaders, helping entrepreneurs create a framework for the messaging that they use and the stories that they tell so that they can really be bringing that innovation and that intelligence and that experience that they have to other people and inspiring them to help them on their journey. Because as a business leader, as an entrepreneur, I mean, it really is a journey and we need everybody to join us and support us. And so if you can get more people to join your tribe through compelling messaging, that is half the battle.
You know, communication is a tricky thing because on the one hand, everybody does it. But as you say, not everyone does it well or does it in the most effective way to help move the needle for whatever it is they're trying to accomplish, their cause, their company, their sales revenue, their ability to change perception around things that matter in their community. So on the one hand, you could say your work is for everybody because every human could work on their communication and be more effective. And yet there's probably some people for whom the stakes are higher. Who are the kinds of clients, individuals or companies that really need this kind of work, that really benefit the most from what you do?
Yeah, it's a great question because I think, you know, for the first few years of my business, I kind of broke marketing 101 rule, which is I was marketing to everyone, which, as we know, means you're really marketing to no one. And so, what I started seeing is that there were certain individuals I'd work with that really got it. They understood that there was a potential opportunity to improve. They saw a need, or they were seeing the downside of it. They weren't getting investment. They weren't, you know, completing those sales deals. They weren't getting the people they needed. So through trial and error and through these sort of network and relationships, when it comes to kind of entrepreneurs, when it comes to business leaders, these are individuals that are, you know, they're really sort of leading the charge and they're bringing people along with them. I also do a fair bit of work in the nonprofit space. And similarly, when you look at the leaders in those organizations, the work they do and the impact that what they do has is this ripple effect through the community and through the world. And so to be able to kind of get those top leaders that are in those positions of, you know, influence and are oftentimes setting that vision for the organization, that's where I identified sort of not only people that recognized that they needed it and recognized the value and, of course, you know, had the ability to pay for it, but where it could truly add tremendous impact and value.
You know, I also, in my storytelling consulting practice, work with a lot of leaders who initially think that that what they need to do is bring me in to train their people. And I always have a conversation with them that says, well, yes, we can do that. However, you got to understand the culture of communication in your organization is a function of the way you communicate. So unless you're willing to be in the room or to work with me before and after in some capacity, this will be fine, but it's not going to make much of a lasting difference because the tone is set from the top. You want people to be more open, more authentic, more real in their communication. It starts with you. People will mirror what you're doing. If the culture is toxic, you and the other senior leaders need to take a good look in the mirror because that's where it's coming from. Amanda, when you are working with, let's say, a small business or a large organization, a nonprofit, how do you identify the kinds of people who are most receptive to your approach? Is it everybody? Or is, as Ashley's suggesting, there a certain kind of mindset that some people are going to have more than others that makes them more effective clients in a way?
Right. Yeah, definitely. And definitely, you know, I've come a long way over the years in terms of learning to deal with different types of clients and troubleshooting and all of those different things. But yes, definitely what I've learned and how I kind of deal with it now is, you know, as a business owner, especially here in media and in communications, we still struggle with everything that any other business owner struggles with. So we can talk all day about marketing and the communication. And as Ashley said, he made mistake number one in his first year of marketing to everybody. And I, you know, same deal here is even though we know the pitfalls of communication, we still will experience them through our own business. So having gone through a lot of those things, I've found that especially in the communities that I work with, there are a lot of mindset challenges that I encounter on a daily basis. And those come in the forms of whether there's communication blocks, it might be limiting beliefs that carry into the business. So a lot of times what I have to realize is that it has nothing to do with me. It really has nothing to do with me. It has to do with the individuals. And I have to try and pinpoint and identify, you know, what is going on with my clients that is making them see this way or this perspective? What are these walls or these blocks that they're experiencing and how can I help them with that? So it definitely has to do with a mindset shift in there. And a lot of times now going forward, having experienced a lot of things, it's also me really honing in on who is my ideal client, knowing these things and how do I attract those more so that I'm, you know, being able to get the best results with my clients. So it's both. It's a give and take. But definitely as being the expert that I'm supposed to be on my side and the professional, I have to realize it's helping them overcome some of these areas in their communications.
You know, it's easy for many folks who are not connected in one way or another to the Native American and Latino, Latinx business communities that you work with to think that Indian country, for example, is somewhere out there, like that this is somewhere geographically distant, and in some cases it is, of course, from major metropolitan areas. But what they miss is the entanglement in which all of us here in the Valley are participating that has historical realities to it, that has unequally situated present privileges and access to resources and things. And so we sort of have this ignorance, some of which is a function of the systemic racism that continues to exist, whether we are aware of it or not. And by the way, it's easy to be unaware of it if you're privileged. That's invisible to you more than anyone else. So here you are in this interesting position, moving in and out of multiple worlds. I mean, even to say Native American and Latinx in the same sentence is to mention two distinct worlds that are connected but distinct. So you really have to bring that cultural competence you spoke of earlier to your own practice, what are some of the challenges and opportunities that you face? Is everybody immediately open and willing to embrace the kind of contemporary digital and other forms of marketing that I know you're encouraging them to be involved in? Are there other forms of resistance? What are some of those kind of negotiations that you make in trying to get your clients to do their best work?
I wish everybody felt that way about these issues and communicating between the communities, because then it'd be a much better world. So everyone would want to listen more. But, you know, yes, I've gone through all stages of the seeing, you know, trying to figure out where's my place in between all of these variables and all of these realms that you've mentioned. And there are definitely a lot of negotiating that you have to go through mentally, in work perspective. And here's kind of what I've come down to over the years is that, and this is where developing that cultural competent methodology that I named it, we'll name it someday, but this methodology that I've worked on is that it all comes down to, you know, first asking, what is culture? What does that mean to people? And why is it important? And that was always the why, whittling that down and getting closer and closer to that. So what I found is that culture is important to everybody. We just have different perspectives on what does that mean, right? We're all parts of different cultures. Video gaming is a type of culture. There's all these different things and terminologies that go into it. And likewise, Native American and Latino communities are part of their own distinct culture. It's just more embedded and it's historical. There's place and location attached to it. So when I translate that into working with clients and then also communicating with between communities is that ultimately it comes down to understanding a person's place, their location by where they live, and what does that mean to them? It comes down to understanding their history. What historical context are they operating out of? And then it comes to language. Language is obviously our main methodology of communicating and how we go back and forth between each other. And so whether that's visually, digital, if it's written language, whatever it is, understanding what that means to a specific community and how they tie that into their culture. And then going forward, how do we then tie the historical perspective into the modern context that we live in today? That's the entire process. Yeah. And there's a lot that obviously goes into it, those different components, but those are the main components of how you break it down, no matter what community you're coming from. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's Native American or Latino. Those are the basic components that matter to everybody. And once you see it on that level, once you see that perspective, it really levels it for everybody, right? Nobody's really talking to anybody differently. There's nothing that we don't understand about each other. It's just we're not on the same page. So once we get that, we change that mindset up for people and my clients and how I communicate with everybody. That's where you really can then tune in to where's this person coming from and how do I get to speak on a level with them where we can understand each other, right? So that's really what a lot of my work is centering around these days.
Yeah, I mean, very well said. And I'm so glad you brought up the visual side of this, because there's a tendency among, I'll just speak for myself, word nerds like me, to focus on the verbal part of messaging and of communication. And of course, that's a very important, very sophisticated, very multidimensional aspect of language. But visual communication is also central and always has been. Ashley, you have a background in design, and there's a certain visual flair that you continue to present that's important to you, your brand, and also it must make its way into some of the advice you give to clients. What's the relationship in dialing in a message between the visual and the verbal parts of it? How do you tackle kind of unpacking that so people are really communicating in multiple channels in the most effective way possible?
Yeah, sure. So I think, you know, it comes down to kind of what is that channel, what is that format, and what is your intended goal there? You know, when it comes to something as basic as, you know, doing a presentation and you have slides, I always like to make sure that we're approaching the visuals there as a support element only, because what that does is it puts the attention on the speaker and it allows them to really be that subject matter expert. And so I think in that context, the visuals play much more of a secondary role. In other types of marketing, you know, that visual element becomes the thing that draws people in. It captures their attention. But, you know, attention's very fleeting. And so you need to be able to follow that up and really understand kind of what, you know, what's the mindset of this person I'm trying to connect with? You know, how are they making decisions? And how am I providing kind of the pathway for them? So maybe that visual caught their attention and then the additional messaging or additional whatever that we put in there takes them onto that next place and pulls them deeper into connecting with us and connecting with our product or our service. And so it really is this kind of multidimensional kind of each element is complementing one or the other.
They have to work together.
Exactly.
Now,
exactly.
One of your core principles is that bad messaging is costing your company money. And I think this is something that maybe people don't really realize. They haven't had that like, oh no, kind of realization. They thought, well, it's good enough, or we've hired an expensive consultant, so it must be fine. How do you get people to start to confront the cost of either inaction or even worse, of bad communication?
Well, so the when I meet with people, especially when I have people call me for sales opportunities, one of the first things I do is I get them really, I want to understand what's going on in their organization. And so, you know, depending on what brought them to me, it could be, you know, they keep experiencing stage fright and someone gave them my name and, you know, they just wanted to get help with that. But what often happens is as I start asking kind of more probing questions and dig into kind of, okay, so this happened at this investor pitch, you know, where else is this happening? And it starts to come out that, oh, it happened at that, and that, you know, that company retreat, and it happened at that, you know, board meeting, and it, you know, and so you start to unpack where this is sort of impacting their business. And then what I'll often do is start assigning a dollar value to it. So, you know, like that investor pitch that you felt nervous and you didn't feel like perform well and you didn't get that investment, what was that worth? Or what was that sales opportunity or whatever that is? And, you know, I do all my sales calls are through video and video messaging, so I can see how they're reacting. But I'm also furiously scribbling notes and doing math. Because what I'll do is come back to them and say, okay, so it sounds like you're missing out on sort of 5 opportunities a month here. And what are those worth? You know, $5,000, $10,000, whatever. And suddenly you can come back to them and say, you're throwing away $50,000 a month or $1,000 or $100,000 a month. And suddenly that starts to, you see the change in their expression. Because all those things that for them have just been, you know, I'm nervous, I'm embarrassed, I feel like a fraud because I'm supposed to be the leader and I'm nervous. Then they suddenly realize like, good God, there's money involved. There's money attached to this messaging.
Yeah, the negative ROI.
Exactly.
Of bad messaging.
Exactly.
Amanda, I've often said that the way most businesses invest in marketing these days, they would probably get a better return on their investment if they took all those dollars out in the parking lot and set them on fire. Because at least somebody would notice and like the fire department would show up and then at least 6 guys and 1 gal would know that your company exists. And so the money would have bought you something. Most marketing dollars go straight in the trash because they don't produce work that reaches the people that they need to build a meaningful relationship with. You're putting together, and you've been operating, something of an anti-agency. How do you approach client work in the sense of what you're providing, what you're delivering, how you work with them? Because the way agency services have traditionally been delivered is also not always a good fit for the clients in your communities. Can you speak to the way you work with them?
Yeah, definitely. And I've definitely heard your analogy before multiple times from people that say, we're just wasting money on marketing.
So I need a better analogy. Is that what you're telling me?
No, it's, I mean,
maybe
it's
you can
still,
help me
it still fits
develop one.
In many cases, but which is sad, but definitely there is something there for the method of how we work with clients. And definitely to Ashley's point as well, is that you got to really put it into concrete terms for people to understand what is the the outcome or the result of not having great marketing? Like, how is this hurting you in the long term? And oftentimes, one of the biggest problems I face, especially working with small business owners and new business owners, is that marketing is usually the last thing on their mind. You know, they're going to go through all the other steps of the setting up the business, creating the product or the service or whatever, and marketing is the very last thing that they save to the end of the day when they're most tired after like a 14-hour day, and then they finally just say, I'm not going to do it. Forget it. I can wait till tomorrow marketing, when it should actually be the very first thing that they focus on. So what we do with Smokefire Media is I try and make it as easy as possible, first of all, for people to access the services, to use them, to understand them, because there are so many blocks around people understanding marketing and how it works and what we do with it. So really breaking it down to the level of the business owner that they need it at, so they can just kind of grab it and go, take it and run, where it's all set up for you here, just take it and start using it. So that's number one. The first thing is ease of access and making that simple as possible for people. But the other aspect that I found was really missing for the marketing agency was that coaching kind of mentality. That yes, you can find marketing consultants at all grades and all different areas in marketing on any specific topic, but to really help someone see through a marketing project or a plan and actually get tangible results, actually create some kind of transformation where they finally get, they're not only going to get, you know, their brand and a logo and see the colors and the visual stuff, but then actually know how to use it at the end of the day and keep using it and keep doing their best marketing to you know, see that in their sales, is a totally different game, right? That is not the service model that marketing industry is built on. It's a pay, you know, fee for service. Here's your thing. Great. Send you on your way. Have a great day.
Right. Or alternatively, it's create a dependence on the agency that locks you into a long-term relationship where, you know, you have to keep paying ongoing retainers, you know, plus for projects and things of that nature. So finding ways to deliver expertise and assets that a business can use and execute, and also developing their people to be more effective ambassadors and communicators for the company, for the small business, for the brand, for the nonprofit, is a key part of the equation. Ashley, how do you approach doing that? How do you work between the decision makers and the frontline people in an organization? Do you find you need to have different conversations with them? Do you need to break them out into practice groups? Like, when you're actually doing a workshop, for example, how does the work get done? And how does it last beyond the session? How do you build that in?
So yeah, to the first part of the question, it's oftentimes I will have either worked with the business leader for that organization, or one of their colleagues or a peer in the industry did. And so that's oftentimes where I'm kind of brought in. And so from there, I now have, you know, someone that is, they're rooting for me within the organization, and they're in a very senior position. And once they see the value and they see, as we talked about a little bit earlier, where messaging is impacting their business and impacting their bottom line, they often want to get as many people from their frontline team involved as they can. In order to make sure that they are, now that they have that understanding of the impact, they want to make sure it's impacting in a positive way as much as possible throughout the organization.
Amanda, when you're talking about packaging things in a new way, it sounds like you're in moving in the direction of courses and coaching, not just fee for service. Is that something that you're building in? What can people see coming from your organization, from your company in the future?
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of that has to do with you know, yeah, I could have definitely gone on with the service model and still doing the packages and things like that. And that's great. But every time that I meet with new clients and we go through this process and I start to talk with them, I just kept coming back to this idea of people. They always come back to me and say, well, I just don't understand how to do this or represent myself, or how do I grow this brand? And I just don't get it. Like, all the pieces would always still come back to, even though we make your brand look great. We have an awesome logo. We have all the cool things, business cards and whatever is designed perfectly, people would still come back and I still felt like there was a need that was being met. So for me, that was me hearing the client say, we need this thing. It's not, we can't find it anywhere else. It's not being done, or we don't see it in somewhere that we, you know, find accessible. And that was my kind of impetus to say, okay, how do we fix this? How do we make it better? And so that's where the coaching part did come in, and moving services online. So that is a new model for us, and that we're learning, and I think will really help as well to scale the impact, because like I said, everything always goes back to impact. So really being able to help as many entrepreneurs as possible on a larger scale. And for us, that model is going to be coaching and doing things more online.
I remember the question I was going to ask you, Ashley, and it has to do with speaking. So a lot of people are afraid of public speaking. You mentioned that's one of the reasons why they bring you in. They're having some stage fright, or they have a presentation they have to give, and they're worried about how it's going to go. How do you begin to address those fears and really get people into a space where they can be themselves and communicate in their own natural way when it comes time, when it really counts?
Well, it is obviously the overarching fear that exists out there. You know, this whole anxiety that comes from public speaking or being out in front of an audience of any kind. And so it's a very personal thing. And, you know, so what I do in my program, I have what I've referred to as the impact method. And a big part of that, the T in impact, is transform yourself. And what I mean by that is, as we go through this process, we're doing kind of self-assessments. We're really kind of digging into kind of where are the challenges, where are the fears coming from. And a lot of it often stems from the fact that they don't have clarity on what they're going to say. And so that just heightens this fear and this anxiety. But what we do is we identify the key messages, the key stories, the key things that they can go to when they need them. And then we go through, you know, essentially refining that and internalizing that and practicing that so that it becomes very much, it's like a muscle. They're able to kind of train it, and they're able to go to it when they need it. And through that trial and error, and it could be, you know, we do mock presentations, it could be we videotape, but there's a whole variety of ways we do that. We're building that confidence, we're building that comfort. You know, but one of the things I say in my workshops whenever I talk is that there's no silver bullet to great public speaking. It is a process of identifying the weaknesses, identifying the opportunities, and then really getting out there and doing it. You know, you have to keep doing it. And each time you'll identify something you did well and something you could have improved on. And the next time it'll be a little bit different dynamic. But the idea is that you're incrementally improving and building that confidence. And ultimately, like we've talked about, getting that message out, getting it to resonate and inspire people that you need to support you on your journey.
As we begin to wrap up this conversation, one of the things I'm interested in is, although you're both in some ways early in your careers, you also have a lot of experience under your belt, a lot of wins, a lot of scar tissue, all the things that come from really trying to make something and build something in this new world that none of us have completely figured out yet. But from where you sit now, looking forward and looking backward, what would be some of the advice or guidance you might give to younger communicators, people who are aspiring maybe to play a role in the world we're now trying to create together? Obviously, you know, everybody between the age of 6 and 16 wants to be a YouTube star or a TikTok star now. They're aware that influencers exist. They're very savvy with using some of the digital technology that, you know, for some of us, I can anyway, remember when none of this existed. What would you say to young, aspiring communicators, storytellers, marketing type professionals, creative professionals that would help them find their way? Amanda?
I would say, especially if you're dealing in the media world, I really feel like there's been a lot of, I guess I wouldn't say lashing out at, but kind of a discounting these days of the press and really what where the start of media began and the heart of it and how it began, especially in this country, and what the whole purpose of storytelling is. So when you go back and look at things like the free press and here in the First Amendment in the United States, and what does that mean? What does that mean to truly be able to freely communicate yourself, and how the media has carried that torch along for the public throughout the years? And so, from that standpoint, I would definitely say, and especially from the cultural standpoint, is that don't forget that no matter what story you're telling, if you're telling it for somebody else, that story is important. It belongs to somebody. And it is your duty as a storyteller, if you're going to be doing that for somebody else or outside of yourself, that is kind of a sacred thing and something that belongs to another person, another community, and it's your job to try and represent it to the best of your ability. It's not yours. It's not something to be owned. And so that's one aspect I would definitely impress upon people to understand.
For the benefit of our listeners, we're doing some of that mentoring and modeling right here in the studio today as your young daughter is here with us. And you may have heard some of the background noise as she moves around and tries to amuse herself while the grownups talk story a little bit. Ashley, what's your advice for young aspiring communicators? What do they need to do to help prepare them to really contribute and make a difference?
Certainly. So I think, you know, one of the biggest things that I remember, sort of that growth for me, was when I sort of moved from feeling like if someone doesn't understand the idea I'm sharing, it's their fault, to realizing that if they didn't understand the idea I shared, it's actually my fault. You know, we're talking about culture quite a bit here. It's like, you know, I, as a speaker, whether I'm the leader of my business or I'm out in front of a group of people at a conference, I need to do a better job of really understanding kind of where are they coming from? What are the things that are top of mind for them? What are the things that they might resist about this idea I'm sharing? And having those top of mind and building those into my talking points. Because, you know, I was talking about this with someone the other day that, you know, as a designer, as a creative person, we often sort of get this mindset of like, you know, we know all these great things and these people that don't understand, it's just because they're not visual, they're not creative, it's their fault. You know, and once I fundamentally started realizing that, you know, that great idea went nowhere because I didn't do a good job convincing the client it was a great idea.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of hubris actually in our world, and and it's kind of the curse of expertise in a way. It's, you know, that we think we know, when in fact the story doesn't belong to the teller. No story ever does. The story lives where the listener, the hearer, the reader, the viewer is, and it's as much their story as it is ours. And that's the nature of how story works. It's not mine. It's something I may be participating in some way. I may be shaping in some way, but by virtue of me speaking it or sharing it in written or visual or whatever oral performance form, it belongs to everyone there. And I didn't own it to begin with. And so the idea of, you know, somehow trying to control that mess, or as you rightly point out, judging other people's failure to get it as their fault rather than owning like, well, maybe I need to refine my approach. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, it very much is this, you know, when you're talking about persuasion, when you're talking about communication, there's an aspect of sort of that shared experience. And so when you are doing storytelling, when you're doing communication effectively, what you're doing is you're creating some space where the person you're speaking to can start to kind of fill in the gaps from their own experience, their own kind of cultural background, so that they're bringing something to the table as well as you. And that's kind of that bridging that gap that exists, whether it's between a founder and an investor or a company and a service and their customer. You know, how do we create that shared experience?
Amanda, as we wrap up this conversation, I just wonder about some of this question of the teller and the audience and the story. Obviously, those three parts of that of the storytelling triangle are in a dynamic relationship with each other, and who can tell what stories and to whom is a complicated thing. For many years, at least outside of the Native American and Latino context, the stories being told about your communities by people who were not a part of the community in many ways shaped, in unfortunate ways, the realities within the community. At the same time, there was, of course, vibrant traditions of storytelling and community building happening within the community, we now live in a world where there's more opportunity than ever to bridge those worlds through story and create connections and, as you said, appreciation for what we have in common as well as what we don't share. How do you see yourself and your role? Is it primarily working within the communities you serve to communicate with themselves, which is 100% valid and important opportunity? Is it speaking from within those communities to others? Kind of how would you kind of address that larger question?
Yeah, I would say it's actually, I really see myself as an ambassador, that's truly what my role is within and without of my community, is to just listen to what is going on in our communities and see how I can use my particular skill set to help them. But then also on the other side, in non-Native and non-Latino communities, to say, what is it that you're trying to see about our communities, or what is it other people don't understand, and trying to just bridge the gap there, whether it's with information or connections and things like that. But that's truly how I see it. My role within this aspect is just to be an ambassador, to listen and to make connections.
Again, so important. I think we all forget, I know I do, that listening is the primary skill in communication. And then what we say is secondary. And our ability to form connections and meaningful relationships with others, both as individuals and groups, starts with our ears more than with our mouth. Amanda June, owner of Smokefire Media, Ashley Bright, founder of Ashley Bright Presents, thank you both for this conversation today. We'll link to your websites and social media profiles in the description along with this episode. In closing, I'd just like to hear from each of you, what's something you see in the near future that you're excited about? There's opportunities or initiatives or something that's happening that gets you lit up as you look forward to what's coming. Ashley?
So a variety of things. I think, you know, this sort of new focus and resurgence, if you will, I don't know if it's a resurgence, but a new focus on entrepreneurship. And, you know, creating these new companies, these new services, these new ideas. And that kind of energy and excitement is moving into other areas. I see this within the nonprofit space as well. You know, organizations are starting to kind of question how they've traditionally done things and if there's new ways of doing this. And I love all of that because it's kind of, you know, we have so many challenges and so many problems that exist out there. To have just literally an army of millions and millions of people that are passionate about trying to solve some of these things, that gets me excited every day.
Marvelous. Amanda, we'll give you the last word. What's on the horizon that lights you up? What are you looking forward to? What are you excited about?
I would say a lot of mine mirrors Ashley's as well, is that there's so many people and doers here that are kind of waking up, and they're seeing that there's so much need out there in the communities beyond, of course, money is important, but we're starting to see kind of this new energy. It's like this energy force that people are like, we want to help each other. It's not just about making the almighty dollar. But I also love, too, in the areas of marketing, that things are becoming so much more accessible through technology for our communities. And now I feel like the challenge is just to bring it to them and show them how to use it and accelerate that growth at an even faster pace.
Marvelous. Well, I appreciate both of you. I appreciate the work you're doing. And I want to thank you for joining us here in the studio today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
You.
This is Dr. Adrian McIntyre. We'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.